This is the Omnichannel Marketer, the show where we get real about what it takes to build a brand, create a seamless omnichannel experience, and drive customer LTV across D2C, Amazon, and retail. I'm Kate Stevens, the CEO of Bridge. Join me for unfiltered conversations from the trenches of e-commerce. We'll unpack strategy and leave you with tactical advice you can use today to drive your business forward. Let's rock and roll. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Omnichannel Marketer. This is your host, Kate Stevens, and today I'm excited to have Fujian Volk from Parachute joining us to chat. Fujian, so nice to meet you.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
So why don't we just start with your personal background? You know, what brought you to your current role and where you are today?
Yeah. So I early in my career kind of didn't know what I wanted to do, but had an affinity towards sort of marketing and brand. I worked at Lululemon very, very early in the days of their sort of growth. This was very much pre-e-com. I was there when they launched e-com. I then moved on to cut my teeth a few different agencies. I'm originally from Toronto, and that's where I grew up. And I worked on clients like Abercrombie and Harley Davidson, mostly like mid to larger brands. And then I was in a very long-term, long-distance relationship. My now husband lived in Los Angeles, and we sort of had to decide one of us needs to move. So who's it going to be? And, you know, I took the opportunity to move to somewhere a little warmer, and I worked at a hospitality company that had multiple different brands, and I sort of oversaw the brands, brand management across all of them. And then at that point in my career, I was working primarily again at like mid to bigger organizations and businesses, and I really wanted to learn how to build a brand from the ground up. I felt like at that time, that's what was missing in my career. And I cold emailed Ariel, Parachute's founder. This was about 9 years ago now. And the brand's been around for 10 years and kind of just like started a conversation. And here we are 9 years later.
Wow. So I guess in what role did you start at Parachute?
I was kind of like the first marketing hire, like the first true marketing hire. It was a very small team at the time, as you can imagine, working out of a little beach house in Venice. Sounds glamorous. It was not. Got a lot of parking tickets. And, you know, as it happens in Venice or in Los Angeles, a lot of termite issues. But it was fun. It was like really cool to sit around the table with a small group of people and like figure out, you know, have disagreements, have healthy tension, and figure out how we want to build this brand from sort of the foundation of it.
That's a lot of fun. So what is Parachute today? You know, talk a little bit about like where that's come.
Yeah. So we like to give you a little context of where the brand sort of started. Ariel was very much, our founder was very much like a design enthusiast long before Parachute even came to be. And she saw this opportunity in the market for a brand to come in and like really build affinity with a consumer in specifically the bedding category. You know, you go into the Bed Bath & Beyonds or the department stores of the world, and you're sort of like looking at these products that you use in like the most intimate of settings, but you look at them through plastic casings, and there's no touch and feel on these products that you are constantly touching and feeling. So she sort of saw an opportunity to change that and build loyalty in the category. So Parachute's inception was kind of the solution to that problem. Since then, since like we started in bedding, but since then, we sort of started to move into all sorts of categories within the home. We really believe that home is your safe space. It is where you can be yourself, your most true self. And having a home that allows that makes you be a better person outside of the home, or enables you to be that outside of the home. So we have moved into lots of different categories within the home. So that includes sort of bedding was our foundation, top of bed. So quilts, the utility products, pillows, those kinds of things. We sort of want to own the bed. And then we moved into the bathroom. That includes towels, robes, slippers, sort of the plethora of products that you use in the bathroom. Shout out to the soft rope towels that are my favorite. And then we moved into places like the living room with our furniture launch a couple years ago. Even from a decor perspective, we had deck pillows and throws and sort of things that make the living room or your home come alive. We moved into kitchen with sort of some utility products like kitchen towels, but also into tabletop. So ceramics, things like that. And we sort of slowly moved into different rooms of the home, taking very calculated risks, understanding that moving into a new category, especially for an emerging brand, is difficult. So how do we de-risk that, but still do it in a really thoughtful, intentional way? I do. I kind of like the idea of, and I think this, we still have, especially if you compare us to some of the bigger home brands, like our awareness, our brand awareness is still not where, you know, the Crate and Barrel Restoration Hardwares of the world are. So in the category, in the home category for us, I do consider us an emerging brand. I also like the idea of being an emerging brand. There's something like it enables us to try things that maybe some of the bigger brands can't. And it gives us a little bit more agency to be nimble and resourceful, that's sort of where I thrive.
Makes sense. So just, you know, backing up to the origins, how did the brand start? What year was that from a channel expansion? You know, very much a digitally native brand. So, you know, how did the timing of that kind of play into that strategy?
Yeah, so this year's our 10-year anniversary. 10 years ago, 2014, we launched, and we were very specifically an e-com only business at the time of launch. We had, so in our offices in that beach house that I mentioned, the upstairs like loft area, we had a little showroom and consumers could come in and sort of touch and feel the product. And we actually learned through that experience that people really like touching and feeling home products. Like they want to see what it feels like on their skin and how they interact with it, what the weight is. And that was kind of the impetus for us being like, okay, we should start thinking about what retail presence looks like for us. Like, what does brick and mortar look like for us as a brand? And that led us to opening our first sort of showroom in Venice on Rose Avenue. It is now a full-fledged store. At the time, it was a little showroom. In the back of it, we had we expanded our offices. And then when we grew out of that, we turned it into a full store. But that was kind of the start of our brick and mortar operations. And we've since opened, we have 26 stores in the fleet now. So we have sort of, we still really believe in e-commerce. And that is the largest part of our business. I think brick and mortar, we are steadfast in our commitment to that as well. And making sure we figure out, or we're continuously figuring out what that looks like in a, you know, at the time it was pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, post-pandemic stage, like what do consumers want from us in that space? And how do we want to, as a brand, show up in that space? Brick and mortar is still really important. But from a channel perspective too, we learned a few years ago that it's really important to have some meaningful relationships from a wholesale perspective. And we're not the kind of brand that's going to have like all of the wholesale partnerships all of the time, but we wanted to focus on where we thought our customer would be shopping. Again, as an emerging brand, our brand awareness isn't as big as the Nordstrom's or Crate and Barrel's of the world. So we actually started with a partnership with Crate and Barrel, and we had sort of two like drops with them. We did both sort of the wholesale side, but we also did some custom collaboration stuff with them. And then we also tested Nordstrom. And ultimately, we really felt we wanted to build a bigger, better relationship with Nordstrom and figure that out more meaningfully. So we did, and we continue to work with Nordstrom today. And then we continue to test into other sort of partnerships that we want to do sort of long-term, more long-term, and less just a little drop in the bucket. So right now we're testing another partnership with Bloomingdale's, specifically in their Upper East Side location. And, you know, hopefully if that proves worthy, we build out that relationship further.
So talk to me a little bit about how you set up these tests and in wholesale, like what are the metrics of success, you know, to you as a brand? Like, how do you think about, you know, why did you decide to really invest more in Nordstrom? And, you know, what are you looking for as you think about Bloomingdale's?
Yeah, I think wholesale is kind of hard for me as a brand person because it is such a black box. Like, we don't know who that customer is. We have educated guesses, but we don't really know the way that we sort of intimately know who our customer is in our stores and on our own retail, on our own e-com. But what I think is so cool about these wholesale partnerships is the amount of brand awareness we get through just the partnership. And we measure that both short-term through our post-purchase surveys, et cetera, but also longitudinally through our brand awareness surveys that we run on a quarterly basis. And we see the lift that comes when we have these partnerships. So Nordstrom was a really interesting one because we started small, right? We had some SKUs. We really wanted to focus around like certain SKUs in bedding, certain SKUs in bath, and certain SKUs in utility. And then we just saw so much success, both from their customer really reacting well to the brand, but then us also seeing the implications on the brand awareness side and customers coming from them to us. So we continue to invest in it, and it's proved really great for both partners. So we continue to double down in that and bring on more SKUs and do more decorative, sort of add more to the decorative assortment, et cetera.
Have you found that the customer base that since Nordstrom, have you found that the customer base has shifted at all around like who you know, as in like your D2C customer? The question is like, do you think any of the Nordstrom customers are coming to Parachute directly? And is it a different customer than who you otherwise acquired digitally?
So yeah, I do think that we see those customers come to Parachute. You know, I think there's certain people who are going to always shop Nordstrom, and that's okay. Like that's where we're building brand awareness. And we see that as a leading indicator. We see like, how did you first hear about Parachute? And Nordstrom is one of those choices. And we see people choosing Nordstrom. And there's some people that we'll never be able to convince to come directly to us. And that's okay. Like we love them, continue to shop from Nordstrom. They are just not going to be the D2C customer. There is a customer that does come from Nordstrom, and where we see that is sort of the lagging indicator of our post-purchase survey. So after a person purchases with us for the first time, we ask them again, where did you first hear about Parachute? And we can see the difference, right, between where we're building awareness and where we're building customer affinity from that awareness. So I think there's a place for both of those customers. And it's important for us to like track them a little bit differently. So that's the, sort of the first part of your question. The second part, which is, did we see a shift in who the customer is? I'm not sure if we saw like a full shift in who the customer is generally, but during the early pandemic, we did see a shift in, or an added customer. And it was sort of this like younger millennial customer that came on board early in the pandemic, because the share of wallet for the home just had increased so substantially. Everyone was spending time in their homes. Everyone was trying to make their homes more comfortable. So we did see a larger demographic of younger customers, you know, coming into the brand. Whether that's directly because of the Nordstrom partnership, I can't say, but we still do see the consistent, like, where did you hear about us from our wholesale partnerships? Where did you hear about us from a consumer perspective? People who actually made the purchase, the wholesale partnerships, still, they're very consistent.
Makes complete sense. And how do you think about your owned retail channels? You know, you talked about the importance of being able to touch and feel it as a customer. Do you find that, you know, similarly, that digitally native customers also shopping you in store, and how do you track between, you know, the online and the in-store purchases?
I think for Parachute, homewares in general, especially soft goods, there's such value in being able, even as for me as a consumer, being able to touch and feel the products. The linen customer is very different from the brushed cotton customer, for example, or someone who likes a heavier weight to their duvet insert is very different than someone who wants a lightweight all season option. So the opportunity to touch, feel, experience the product, there's an immense amount of value to that. And we really we are steadfast in the commitment to that and believe it is a very big differentiator for us as a brand. You know, I think there are learnings that we've had along the way and opportunities that we took or didn't take. And there is constantly going to be an evolution to how we view success in those channels and how we view the opportunities in those channels. So as an example, we launched furniture a few years ago. Like I also mentioned, we have been really good in the past at moving into a category and sort of de-risking that expansion. So like being really thoughtful and intentional and going about it in sort of like in incremental ways. With furniture, we did that for the category itself. But I think where we had opportunity or the learning we've had is some of the newer stores that came on online, the square footage was just really big. And it was big because it was meant to hold some of this furniture assortment, right? Like the full living room, the full bedroom. When we first launched retail, we really wanted to be thoughtful about the retail space and make it feel like someone's home that they're coming in, the consumers are coming into, and it feels warm and cozy and comforting and inviting, and being really sort of thoughtful about those design touches and making people feel at home in our stores. And I think the bigger they got, maybe the harder that felt. So we like have tried really hard over the past year to take a look at every store and be really thoughtful about how we're presenting in those stores and who the customer is for those specific stores.
As it relates to the selection of the location of those stores, so you kind of just commented on size. Mm-hmm. As it relates to the location, how did you guys determine where you wanted to open up stores?
That's a great question. We're always learning about the markets. I think there's like some obvious markets, right? LA, for example, we're based, born and raised in LA, if you will, as a brand. So it made sense to really invest in that market. And we also know that New York is like, we had a lot of D2C customers in New York. So we believed that D2C being e-com customers in New York. So we believed that that was also a place that we could sort of thrive as a brand in real life. So those two markets were sort of foundational to us and continue to be foundational. And then there's the other primary markets where our customer lives. And that includes Chicago, San Francisco, sort of the upper west, northwest, Seattle, Portland. It also includes places like some of these other big cities like Boston. We also do really well in places like Austin. And there's sort of these sort of primary markets that we know our customer exists in, and we believe in investing there in a very tangible brick and mortar way. And then there's some of these secondary markets that we're trying to build into. So somewhere like Denver or Boulder, we believe our customer exists there. We may not have super high brand awareness there. We do measure brand awareness in regional markets as well. So we may not have super high brand awareness there, but we see a lot of opportunity because we understand that our customer lives there. So we'll go after those markets as well.
So title of this podcast is The Omnichannel Marketer. And one of the things I liked, the title of this podcast is The Omnichannel Marketer. One of the things I like to do is ask our guests how they would define omnichannel. So would love to ask you that question.
So I think omnichannel for us as a brand is meeting our customer where they are. So regardless of what we think is omnichannel, if we can be where our customer wants to purchase our product, that is what omnichannel is for Parachute. So, you know, if they are shopping, we know that our customer has a high affinity towards a place like Nordstrom. We want to be there so that we can be where our customer is shopping. We know that homewares are very much purchased in real life. So we want to have physical locations so that our customer can purchase where they want. That's sort of what omnichannel, I think, means to me and Parachute as a brand.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. So, you know, you have your D2C, you have owned retail, and you have some wholesale. How do you ensure a consistent end-to-end brand experience across all of those touch points?
So I, as sort of the head of brand, I view my role, you know, partly in the marketing and brand aspect of it, but also in championing the entire organization to become brand stewards. So we do a lot of training, and both from like a development perspective and onboarding perspective, constantly reminding every single person that works in the organization, whether they are a retail associate, CX, to our executive team, about what being a brand first means. So there's a lot of presentations, conversations, not flyers, but like documents that go out to just sort of really crystallize who we are as a brand, how we want to speak as a brand, and how our customers should feel when they interact with the brand. So we're very intentional about all of those things. And I think it's not lost on me that, you know, the brand team is a small team. The creative team is a small team, but we have this really large organization, and we want them to all be brand stewards just as much as I am or our VP of creative is.
Makes complete sense. Something that I like to ask is, you know, a topic that our guests feel boldly or passionately about. So I'd love to ask what that is for you.
That's a really good question. I think so more and more, especially in the past year, I think there's been this pendulum swing from, so like for the past few years, I think growth or performance marketing really held the spotlight, and brand, for lack of a better term, had been relegated to the basement, especially in the kind of D2C space. And I'm very excited and kind of emboldened by this resurgence of brand, or the balance being brought back again. We all know the privacy issues, the algorithm changes, like performance marketing has just become pretty expensive and has kind of hamstrung a lot of what propelled the industry in the past few years, especially in the early pandemic. We've also seen sort of the share of wallet shift and optionality for consumer goods continue to increase. So as time has passed and the early pandemic scale at all costs, like the fever we all had has dissipated. I think we've collectively as an organization, but also as an industry, come to realize that brand and growth and performance, I think what we've realized is that without brand and without investment in brand, growth and performance marketing are flashes in the pan without real longevity. And I'm very excited, and maybe that's a controversial take if I talk to some of my performance marketing peers, but I think that like you cannot build a business without investment in brand. And I'm really heartened by sort of that sentiment being more prevalent now than it was maybe 2 years ago.
And what's a way that you guys are investing in brand, or maybe an activation that you're particularly excited about?
Yeah, I think for us, the first thing that'll come to mind for me is experiential. So we held about 200 retail events last year and really like sort of wanted to see whether our customer likes those in real life experiences. And then we also tested this concept in December of last year called the Holiday Village, and think like a European style holiday market in Los Angeles, complete with snow. We had 40 different brands participate, you know, had everything from like an area for kids to play and color, to gift wrapping, to brands selling, you know, their products for holiday gifts, to an embroidery station we created. We upcycled product to make, you know, a parachute holiday assortment that included stockings and tree skirts and ornaments. We sold robes, and then all of it could be embroidered at the embroidery station. And then there was food and drink. It was really fun. It was this sort of really nostalgic, warm and fuzzy experience. And we saw so much positive come out of it. Just one, from a sentiment perspective, people who learned about parachute through the Holiday Village had such high sentiment scores when we surveyed them. But we also saw like people shop, people have fun. Everyone who left had just like this smile on their face. We felt that in real life. So this year, we've doubled down on that strategy. Like, we really believe that these experiential moments are, they've always been core to who Parachute is as a brand. But I think especially in this post-pandemic time, there's people want to learn, or people want to connect with each other. And if we can provide opportunities, it's not necessarily them connecting with a brand, but this connection with each other in a way that makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside, that's sort of the experiential place that we want to go. And we're doubling down on that this year.
Makes complete sense. And that village sounds so much fun. So I totally see
it. It's coming back. We're doing it. We're going to do it again in 2024.
Ooh, I guess I need to take a trip to LA then.
We would love to have you.
So transitioning into our lightning round, kind of just like quick questions. Favorite omnichannel brand other than Parachute?
I actually really struggled with this one because I love a lot of brands for a lot of different reasons. I think the one that kept coming to mind for me is Patagonia. And specifically because, I mean, they do a lot of things in really interesting ways. They are a brand that like really understands who they are to their core. But I kind of love some of these more experiential or more like value-driven activations that they're doing. So they have this like thrift shop concept, and I came across it in LA for the first time in real life myself. I actually happened upon it at the Third Street Promenade in Santa Monica. And they're sort of taking that idea around the world, and you can bring product in to mend it. They sort of help, they facilitate the mending of it. They have people on site to do it, and it's called the thrift shop. And I think it's just such a cool, really value-driven way to, for the brand to connect with their consumer. I think it's really cool.
Love that. What do you wish you could change about our industry?
I'm going to go back to what I was talking about with the pendulum swinging, but from like very performance heavy, like marketers were really about this like growth mindset and effects of, or marketing was evaluated based on the quick effects to the bottom line. And like that includes for us too, you know, we looked at a 7-day return window for our marketing efforts, and just understanding that that is not how people purchase. People become aware of a brand, and it takes time for them to consider the product and then ultimately purchase. So I think the rebalancing, I wish it would happen faster in the industry of the relationship between brand and performance, if you will.
Favorite podcast?
I actually consume a lot of podcast content. So this is actually a tough one because I have so many that I just listen to regularly. I think there's obviously like the usual marketing strategy leadership ones. I listen to a lot of the HBR ones. I think my favorite one that is not specific to my job would be Hidden Brain. And I think it's because like I am naturally a pretty curious person, and so much of brand building is about human behavior. And I think Hidden Brain does a really interesting job of diving a bit deeper into motivations and behavior and helping me step out of what is my regular echo chamber. So I really like that one.
I'm going to have to check that out. That sounds super interesting. Favorite newsletter?
Oh, this is going to be a controversial opinion, but my email inbox is a huge source of anxiety for me lately. I feel like the amount of cold emails I get is just alarming. I don't know if you feel the same way. There's just so much happening in my inbox. And honestly, newsletters used to be the primary way I consumed content, but I've been on a pretty big unsubscribe spree lately. There are still a few. I like every time I see them in my inbox, I open immediately. And there's one in particular called growth.design. And it's actually it's really interesting, because they actually send these case studies, and the case studies sometimes are about marketing, but sometimes are about UX, sometimes they're about product design. They're all sort of all over the place, but they're really easy to digest case studies about how psychology informs like creating better products and better experiences. So I really like that one. It's called growth.design.
Favorite social media channel?
From a sort of content collection learning perspective, is right now it's probably TikTok. But I personally think that maybe this is also a controversial take, but Pinterest is such an undervalued asset in the social media world. It is honestly the first place I go to search. If I have like a specific idea and I'm looking for inspiration for it, I go to Pinterest first, because the quality of the content is so good. And then if I'm like bookmarking things to collaborate, it is a really good collaboration mechanism, especially when you're noodling on ideas. And then I often revisit it because I have bookmarked so many things, and they make that bookmarking tool so easy. I often revisit it when I just want to look at beautiful content and not worry about the algorithm sending me down a particular rabbit hole.
That's fair. Favorite book?
I think my favorite one was recommended to me by, and this is maybe my favorite one over the past 12 months, was recommended to me by a friend. She actually recommended it to me way too many times before I actually purchased it and read it. It's a book called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. I spent a lot of 2023 reading sort of like leadership, marketing specific kinds of books. And this was not that. And it was like a really refreshing take on connection and identity, love and being loved. I highly recommend. I should have listened to her the first few times that she recommended it, but it's called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. It's a really good read.
I've definitely heard of that. So I'm, you know, looking it up myself now and going to download. So
it's really, really good.
Okay.
Like awesome. Sometimes, you know, when you read a book and afterwards you think like, what was my life like before I read this book?
Wow.
It's really good. It's just like, it's a really touching story.
Okay. Awesome. Event that you're excited about going to this year.
Well, I'm going to plug two parachute events happening. There's, we are doing something really fun in New York this summer. The details are still under embargo, if you will, but there's something really exciting happening in New York this summer. And then we are also doing the Holiday Village again in LA this December. So those two I'm really, really looking forward to.
Well, I am New York based, so I'm looking forward to hearing about that event when it's released. So that's very exciting.
Yes, we're very, very excited.
Thank you so much for your time. Where can our listeners connect with you?
I am on LinkedIn, so that's probably the best place to reach out to me.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
If you liked this podcast, follow me and The Bridge page on LinkedIn and Twitter for hot takes and tactical advice. If you really loved today's episode, we'd love a review on the podcasting platform of your choice, Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thanks for listening.